We've entered into another season of Star Wars Mania. The saga's final episode, Revenge of the Sith, is the story of how handsome juvenile action hero Anakin Skywalker transforms into one of cinema's most memorable villains, Darth Vader. Before we hear a review, we'll play you a few of our favorite Star Wars parodies. See if you can recognize where they're from.
Star Wars! If they should Star Wars, please let these Star Wars stay.
Christopher Walken, Han Solo screen test. Okay, Chris, whenever you're ready.
I'm captain of the Millennium Falcon. Chewie here tells me you're looking for passage to the Alderaan system.
Yes, indeed, if it's a fast ship.
Fast ship? You've never heard of the Millennium Falcon. It's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. She's fast enough for you, old man. That sucked. I'm sorry.
And may the Schwartz be with you.
We sent Triumph the Insult Comic Dog to the Ziegfeld Theater right here in New York City, and we had him check out the line of diehard Star Wars fans. Here, ladies and gentlemen, is his report.
Yes, it's premiere night here for Attack of the Clones, but outside the Ziegfeld Theater is the real show. Return of the Dorks.
So what's going on here? You've got a little future nerd in here?
Yes, yes, future nerd, future Jedi.
When is he due?
June 27th, 6 weeks.
Wow. That's the last time he'll ever see female genitalia.
Very exciting. Darth Vader himself is here. All the other nerds tremble in his presence.
This would be my chest box that helps me to breathe.
So this is to help you breathe, yes?
Yes.
And which of these buttons calls your parents to pick you up?
Our work here is over. We have enjoyed our stay. But the forces of reality and the demands of a normal sex life compel us to depart. May the force be with you. For me.
Okay, starting from the final clip, we heard Triumph the Insult Comic Dog on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, Mel Brooks in a scene from Spaceballs, Kevin Spacey on Saturday Night Live doing his impression of how Christopher Walken would have sounded at a Star Wars screen test, and we opened with a parody of the Star Wars theme. I know our film critic David Edelstein recognized it. Here's David.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Sorry, I've had Bill Murray's lounge singer running through my head because out there, there is nothing but Star Wars. People have even pitched tents in front of theaters. I envy their faith because George Lucas's last two Star Wars episodes, The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, were barely movies. That wonderful Flash Gordon giddiness from the first cycle was long gone, and in its place was this stiff, almost kabuki theater pageantry, tricked to life with vast amounts of computer-generated busyness and Medusa dialogue, lines that turned actors to stone. After seeing Episode 3, The Revenge of the Sith, I thought, finally, finally we get to the point. This is not just the summation of the last two films. It's the prelude to the summer 1977 blockbuster that changed pop culture. If for no other reason than that, the movie delivers. It should be said that the first third is pretty bad. The effects are as beautiful and fluid as money can buy, but there's zero suspense. And Lucas still has runaway digititis, the compulsion to sprinkle every pixel with cyber MSG. So that the simplest conversation is upstaged by a backdrop of darting shuttlecrafts. It's like the actors are competing with hundreds of goldfish on speed, and what they speak is barely speakable. The word is that Lucas was persuaded to bring in a real writer, Tom Stoppard, to punch up the dialogue. But there's only so much you can do with a line like, "Hold me like you did by the lake on Naboo." On a brighter note, the big ideas come into dramatic focus. The conflict is between the light and dark sides of the Force. In the light, that is Zen Buddhist L-I-T-E corner, is Yoda, who lectures Anakin Skywalker, father of Luke, played by Hayden Christensen, that a Jedi must let go of all attachments, which only lead to jealousy and resentment. In the dark corner is Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, a.k.a. Darth Sidious, played by Ian McDiarmid, who tells Anakin that the Sith believe not in denying one's emotions, but going all the way with them. He plays on Anakin's fears for his true love, Padme, played by Natalie Portman, and stirs Anakin's jealousy. Jedi's Yoda, voiced by Frank Oz, and Mace Windu, played by Samuel L. Jackson, don't trust Anakin, even though Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi still believes in his pupil.
Anakin did not take to his new assignment with much enthusiasm.
It's very dangerous putting them together. I don't think the boy can handle it. I don't trust him.
With all due respect, Master, is he not the chosen one? Is he not to destroy the Sith and bring balance to the Force?
So the prophecy says.
A prophecy that misread could have been.
He will not let me down. He never has.
I hope right you are.
You know, in the history of the medium, there has never been a visual disconnect like Samuel L. Jackson whispering into the ear of Yoda. As the dark side seizes Anakin, Christensen tilts his forehead into the camera, rolls his eyeballs up, and tries to look like Malcolm McDowell in A Clockwork Orange. But the acting Force just isn't with him. Still, the movie comes to life. Those humorless Jedis get picked off, the lean, hard visuals of the Empire reappear, and John Williams' old musical motifs from the first film creep back in. The final movement, The Last Temptation of Annie, fills you with both excitement and dread, as Obi-Wan and Anakin plunge into an epic battle on a planet of volcanoes, and Williams pulls out the Wagnerian stops, and the effects finally amplify the emotions instead of distracting you from them. When Anakin goes to his hellish fate amid swirls of lava, you know why? For the Darth Vader he becomes, there is no going back. This is when Lucas's anti-fascist politics come into focus, too, when the Senate cheers the new galactic empire, and Padme realizes that in the name of security, she and everyone else aided in the dismantling of a democracy, handing over the reins to an unscrupulous dictator. In the end, it's worth doffing our beanies to a guy who wouldn't settle for Flash Gordon, who was driven to turn Saturday matinee space junk into a six-part epic that needed the combined forces of Milton and Shakespeare to do it full justice. There's a breadth, a fullness to this saga that makes it more than the sum of its clunks. Now that it's over, we can still dream of Jedi.
David Edelstein is film critic for the online magazine Slate.